Not interested, not
we're fully complete. And you will see right now how we did it. First slide will be, it's the beginning of our story. It's 2014. It's a revolution of dignity. I was nominated governor of Central Bank in June 2014. Exactly my first working day was 10 meters from this Maidan Square. And it was a real picture of this Maidan Square. And it's not only it's June of 2014, but in February 2014, Crimea was already annexed by Russia. In June, July, and August of 2014 started real bloody war in Donbas. And my next slide will be for you. It's today's slide. 2002, Ukraine becomes again a geopolitical flashpoint. Threat is distant possibility that the Russians could invade Ukraine in February. Right now, what? February. So we are talking right now about possible invasion of Russian to Ukrainian territory again. Why it's a very, very serious? Because it's already happened in 2014, as I showed you before. And you see all the newspapers, all information, all American newspapers, BBC, Boris Johnson recently visited Ukraine. Today, Emmanuel Macron in Ukraine. That's why Ukraine is a real flashpoint of geopolitical tension. And right now I will show you why reform is so important. Because right now, even if some hints of panics already exist in Ukraine, we didn't observe anything like we saw in 2014. And why it's happened? Only because we completed real drastic reforms. We will start with, of course, the starting position of the Ukrainian financial sector reform in Ukraine. And it's a very, very representative slide, because it was a reform crisis. We call it perfect storm in 2014, 2015. First of all, it's a macro crisis. It's a severe economic recession, hiking inflation, sharp drop of export, and of course, widening budget deficit. It was absolutely incredible because we in Crimea we lost 3 million people of 3 million people and about 3.5% of our GDP. But in Donbas, this part which was already occupied, it was 15%. It was 15% of our GDP. 15%. We lost it in one day. Because it was not just occupied, its infrastructure was really destroyed. All connections, business connections were destroyed. And Donbas was a real, real industrial sector. That's why we lost not just 10% of our territory, we lost in one day 15% of our GDP. And we also lost 30% of our export revenues. And that's why macro crisis was absolutely incredible. Of course, we have a currency crisis, because you could imagine when all of that happened, it was a real shock for economy. But even without this shock, Ukraine collected absolutely incredible disbalances during the 20 previous years. And I will show you what happened even before the war. And after, it was an absolutely awful banking crisis. It was a real bank run. Interest rate spike, credit crunch, mounting NPLs, capital shortage, and disasters of corporate governance of Ukrainian banking system. That's why it was just absolutely incredible, a perfect storm here, macro currency banking crisis. Be prepared that in one day, if you live in some emerging market country, if crisis started, I truly believe that all of these three components will start together. Maybe not in such extent like in Ukraine because of war, but nevertheless, it will be macro, currency, and banking crisis in one. Even before on this 2014, even before I told you about these collected disbalances, it was absolutely incredible. Current account deficit reached 10% of GDP, or in figures it was $16 billion minus each year. But former central bank support peg US dollar to US dollar exchange rate and pretended that everything was okay. But absolutely it was no reserves anymore because they spent all reserves. And I will show you how it looks like. And it was absolutely incredible devaluation, but central bank has no any ammunition anymore because we do not have any currency reserves. When I joined central bank, the gross reserves were about $5 billion, but net reserves were minus $3 billion. Minus means the country is a full bankrupt. And I already told you about reserves. It's a picture about these reserves. And it's absolutely awful outflow of from banking system. It's a real bank run. Because war in your territory, nobody knows what will be tomorrow. People tried to withdraw all possible money from current account, from term deposit. It was absolutely just incredible. Banks run, and Ukrainian banking system in 2014 lost 40% of household deposits. When I told all of that to my colleagues and peers from other central banks, they were just shocked because they could not even understand what could you do if you lost 40% of your deposits in your banking sector. And especially it was some withdrawal of 20% of deposits in local currency, but over than 50% in foreign currency deposits. And unfortunately, before I joined central bank, Ukrainian economy was fully dollarized. Ukrainian banking system was overflowed of foreign currency deposits. And it was just like, of course, we have our local currency, but all settlements, all negotiations, real estate, even there were some mortgages, everything was in foreign currency, and deposits of the population also was in foreign currency. And if you could even imagine that during the devaluation of your currency, central bank, of course, could issue their own money, but unfortunately, only one central bank could issue dollars. It's a Federal Reserve. And after you see how we cover the budget deficit, I think this slide is absolutely interesting for Andres, because what to do in the wartime? How to cover all your needs in a wartime? Nobody would like to help you to support, you know, army and your extra expenses for war. And unfortunately, we supported mostly by local QE, is it visible here, portfolio of treasury bills of central bank tripled during this time. But it was emergency. You could not do anything else. I could tell you, my book even started from this. I recall my meeting with Stanley Fisher. You remember he was governor of Israeli Central Bank. And that time when I met him in 2014, I especially asked this meeting. He worked in Washington. He was deputy governor in the Federal Reserve Bank. And when I described him in collected disbalances of previous time, I also explained what's happened, what is the wartime, and what kind of expenses we have, what kind of budget deficit and quasi-budget deficit. Quasi-budget deficit is a state company deficit, which also consolidated to your position.
If I can interrupt for a minute, the pink bit of the bar is gigantic, right? I remember arriving in Kiev, looking at the fiscal accounts and thinking, what is this pink thing? The pink thing is the deficit of the natural gas company.
Yes, because
you bought gas at world prices or produced gas at world prices and sold it to households at zero, basically. And that was a gigantic hole in the public finances.
It was just incredible. And when I asked Stanley Fischer about what should I do, because you please provide me your advice, because you were the governor of Central Bank of Israel when Israel in permanent war. And after he observed everything and said, mission impossible. Because he explains that they have a special budget for army, that have special dedicated funds from America for their military needs and blah, blah, blah. Ukraine has nothing of that. And that's why we had absolutely no other way but to do local QE. But in the same time, we understand the consequences of these actions. We understand that if you could do that once, but it should not be your real policy for down the road, because otherwise you will be definitely Venezuela or something like that. And that's why, So we have alien economy, alien banking system, and non-transparent and not official central bank. It's a legacy which I got in one day when I joined central bank. As you see, military aggression and annexation of Crimea, external misbalances, devaluation of local currency, commodity dependent export, weak government institutions, banking system, it was a different story. It was just awful. I could tell in this slide, just awful. And non-transparent and not official central bank. And when I joined Central Bank, it was a real medieval monster with 12,000 people, with 25 regional decentralized offices, when each particular head of regional office pretend to be a king sitting in his territory. It was just absolutely ridiculous, non-effective organization with 12,000 people. You will see what we did, like a transformation of central bank. So we start our reforms. It's monetary policy, structural banking sector reform, and central bank transformation. And financial sector require radical reforms. We will not, again, pay attention for all of them, because as I told you about high dollarization, insufficient capitalization of financial system, large numbers of insufficient banks and financial institutions, low level of supervision, low corporate governance. It was just a disaster. That's why let's go further. Yeah, and we decided to start our comprehensive reform. What was the anchor of our reform? When you start to do reform, you need to find any anchor. You need to start from something. And for us, anchor was our intention to be part of European Union. And I think it's always very, very important for all countries to find what they'd like to achieve. And our revolution of dignity, which you see in 2014, it was exactly about we'd like to be a part of European Union. And our former president, he refused to sign association agreement with European Union, and finally it was a revolution. That's why inspiration of Ukrainian people was to be a part of Europe. That's why for us, it was a real anchor was of these EU requirements for financial sector, all these EU materials, documents, the policies, practices. It was our anchor. And we start to move there. And of course, the prerequisite for sustainable development of the financial sector are ensuring macroeconomic stability and resolving the problem of the past. Because without resolving the problem of the past, you could not move at all, because it will be not a reforms. It will be just some maybe cosmetic, a little bit the polishing. And that's why we need, what we'd like to achieve, of course, financial stability, institutional capacity, and protection of consumer rights. And all of that was under umbrella of EU requirements. And of course, I remember when I first time called strategic meeting in the central bank, everything was just shock because never happened any strategic meeting in Ukraine before. And it was our vision, mission, and our values. Our vision was National Bank is a modern, transparent, and independent central bank trusted by the public and integrated into the European community and national central banks. Our mission to ensure price stability and financial stability, contributing to the sustainable economic development of Ukraine. And our values is just five P. Partnership, integrity, transparency. So 5P, it's our values. All of that, it's just slogans. All of that is just nothing. When you see vision, mission, values, if you will not really create everything in life, all of that will just slogans for newspapers. Your main idea to really achieve all these goals. The key aim of the National Bank transformation was to enhance the regulatory ability to exercise the main function of the central bank. Central bank main functions, but let's repeat, achieve and maintain price stability. You know, right now central banks maybe forget about this main principle of central bank, because you see absolutely not normal level of inflation in even developed markets. I will not tell you about 50% inflation in Turkey. And just 55.0, and even more than 7 in the US. But again, you know, inflation is also some government really play with a basket of inflation products. That's why sometimes inflation in reality could be even higher. And of course, it's always discussion between the central banks and statistic committee and Ministry of Finance about the real rate of inflation. And today we are just talking about central bank reform. I'm not talking about Ministry of Finance reforms, our statistic committee reform, because without these reforms, all of that will be just mission impossible. To do that like mission possible, you should work together. But today we are concentrated on banking sector, okay? In next time, maybe it will be more higher level, more helicopter view about how to achieve all of that, because you will see only just one part of that. And how to achieve goals. Of course, it's achieving main price stability, contribute to financial stability, and promote sustainable economic growth. It's also, it's like a mantra for all central banks. Unfortunately, not all of them follow these very simple rules. An area where to achieve goals, independent in policy formulation and implementation, it's must. It's the first one what policy makers should do. It should be, they should be protected for their in policy formulation and implementation. And of course, quality improvement of decision-making system and a simplification of central bank activity as an institution. And you will see how it is.
Valeria, can I interrupt with a question?
Yes.
Yes, please. Tell us a little bit about the transformation itself, because you presented a feudal central bank and now you're talking about financial stability and promoting, you know, sustainable economic growth and efficiency and transparency and consumer protection. How was it like to stabilize, to get be in command, stabilize the crisis? How long did that take? And what was it like to step over vested interests? How was the reaction of the government, of the private sector, of the citizens themselves?
Yes.
So how was the process like?
I know the 12,000 people who worked in the central bank under different rules.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why, it's the beginning of my presentation. 65 pages, and you will see everything.
Okay.
My main idea, never start any new project. For me, it was because I was from a real banking sector. I was not a government employee, not a servant, state servant before I joined central bank. my role start from the beginning. That's why beginning was mission, vision, values. Forward. Next one, comprehensive plan. To achieve comprehensive plan, you should write this comprehensive plan. It's a strategy. What should you do? What you'd like to achieve? And after you will see even how we did it, because it will be slide about what kind of techniques we use for that. Yes. When you see, for example, it's banking sector. When we observe banking sector, it will be also slide about techniques, how many banks we had, what we did, what kind of banks. But initially, you need to understand what you like to do, or how you will achieve, how you will go from point A, total disaster, to point B, rose future. It's for you, it's a way how to do that. And it's a way 2014 and the end, but of course, this part, like for sustainable financial development, will be the end. You would always improve, improve, improve. But the first idea, it was resolution of problem of the past. We call it cleaning up of Ukrainian banking system. You will see how we do it, how we did it. Second one, we call it reloading, because you need to start new banking system when you clean up the old one, how to do that. But for you, it should be some stages and ideas. Otherwise, if you start to do something without real vision, what you'd like to achieve, I do not know how you will achieve. And the second part, of course, it's a development of financial markets, but development of financial sector and financial markets as well. Yes, let's go further. It's exactly maybe to your question, but more technical one. Because the first part of presentation, it's about the concept. It's we use project management algorithm for turning and comprehensive system from basic to target stages. Means what we did, because you need to analyze problem. You need to analyze international practices to understand what you'd like, what is your role model, why you'd like to do that. After, of course, you should create the concept of these changes. After, you should discuss concept and draw laws and regulations. Because if you start from scratch in a country when there is no laws and regulations, you are policymakers, you need to do that. Your parliament will just approve it, but you need to write it. You need to understand what you need to put to this legislation. It's a very, very complex. It's not just, clean up the system. No, even to clean up, you need a special law. How you do that? For example, you'd like to achieve central bank independence. You need a special law about the independence of central bank, even including some protection and guarantees for governor of central bank and employee of central bank. It also should be there. And that's why it's very, very complex. Never observe that you can write one pager called policy and you will solve the problem. It's never happened. There is no simple solutions. There is a complex solution of complex problems, but it's a complex. That's why you need to, and my recommendation to all of you, to take some courses, like a project management courses, it's in internet, you can easily find. You need to understand the principle of project management. It will be very, very useful to your future life because you will be very good structure. Yes, you see, we will not bother you with this slide, but again, it's about some approach, methodological approach to process management, organizational centralization management, technological introduction. You need to do all of that. It's not like a panacea that you do something and it's happened by chance. No, you need to plan step by step. I will even not show you how comprehensive plans we have. It's like a huge, huge screens of tons of icons for each particular project. For example, I will tell you about international technical assistance. It will be very, very helpful. When I joined Central Bank and it was country in war, all other central bank and also BIS and also IMF and World Bank and EBRD, they all proposed me technical assistance. And it's a total complete mess. They never understand your real needs, first of all, and after they overlap to each other, they spend tons of money for inefficient technical assistance. And of course, I set up a special division within a central bank to observe what we need, like a technical assistance, what's the priority of this technical assistance and how to organize it. And it's, frankly speaking, it was very, very useful. And finally, when you will see our reforms, 70% was based on technical assistance. And I had a 50 project of technical assistance, but it was a real project to the point with the defined priorities. Yes, floating rate. Market liberalization roadmap. So it's about Ukrainian, again, legacy. When Ukrainian currency, first of all, Ukraine, it's 30 years of independence. We celebrated last summer. In 1996, Ukraine launched their own currency called hryvnia. And in this time, the rate hryvnia against the dollar was 1.3. Right now we are talking about 27. You know, and after you see, was that it's only 2005? I told you about 1996, but when it was 1.3. But in 2005 it was 5. And then after you see, when you back to US dollar, it will be always like stages. Stable, bam, devaluation. Again, crisis, panic, stable, wow, devaluation. During that time, you collect all your misbalances. You collect all absolutely inefficiency. It's every time you collect, and after it's
the
blow up.
When the exchange rate was pegged, how much is inflation?
But
it's
of course, again, for example, this time it was a big financial crisis. You remember all of that. It was a real shock for all markets. Inflation was higher. After, of course, because it's bad. It's, but they spent absolutely inefficiently all reserves. They borrow, government, they mean borrow money from all possible sources, euro bonds, IMF, whatever, and they just siphon money to support inefficient, absolutely overweight. But even without war, it could be blow up again because of all these misbalances when I show you before, and also because of current account deficit was already 10% negative. But it's about, we have no reserves, as I told you, we have no anything. That's why for us, it was time to switch to floating exchange rate. And I truly believe that we had no any other alternative. Moreover, I truly believe that for developing countries, which not maybe linked to oil and gas, it could be a different story, for example, for Arabian Emirates, because it's 100% linked back to their oil reserves. But for a country like Ukraine, for emerging market countries, I truly believe that there is no any alternatives for today for just floating exchange rate and monetary policy of inflation targeting. And that's why for us was no even difficult task to understand what we need to do. It's a floating exchange rate and new monetary policy of inflation targeting. And after, it's also a slide about currency, border, region, conventional bank, rolling bank, different banks, and floating and free floating. And IMF reclassified Ukraine to country with floating rate exchange rate regime in 2014 when I was a governor of Central Bank. And again, we already discussed with you back to US dollar, currency crisis back to US dollar. And it was before we already and the world proclaimed irrevocable numerical target for inflation targeting and de facto transition to inflation targeting monetary regime you since August 2015. From the beginning of 2016, we started an IMF reclassify Ukraine like inflation targeter. And it was not even very easy to negotiate with IMF. They quite also, they like to control monetary aggregates and all of that. But finally, we convinced them. And in the beginning of 2016, when 2015 was absolutely incredible inflation in Ukraine, because three times devaluation of local currency gave us, of course, pass-through effect for inflation, and because Ukraine is a small open economy. And that's why inflation was 46% when we launched our inflation targeting regime. Yes. And let's go further. It's about currency liberalization, because what we did, we introduced floating rate, but in the same time, we introduced absolutely incredible, even draconic administrative measures. Because when country in the wartime, you could not pretend anymore that you in the mode business as usual. You are not in a mode business as usual. You need immediately introduce some restrictions. But in the same time, you need to prepare liberalization roadmap and show how you will liberalize markets step by step, based not date by date, but based by some achievements or some data which already give you a chance to start your liberalization. And what we did, we of course, it was we tried to find equilibrium. In my book, it was really one chapter about how to find equilibrium. If in 2014 someone give me the book How to Find Equilibrium, I will very appreciate. Unfortunately, it's not happened. It was very, very painful for banking sector, for economy, for but we have no any other chance to do. That's why we did it. And finally, we introduced all these draconic measures, but after we introduced liberalization, roadmap for liberalization. Again, it's a very useful chapter about liberalization. What should be done in the stage zero? It's a current account in the foreign direct investments. It's not under any restrictions. After stage one, it's a portfolio investment credit operation by legal entities should be free, and only second, it's financial operation by individuals, means by local individuals, by Ukraine. We're already far away from even this. It's already very limited capital control, and even for Ukrainian individuals. But initially, it was just very drastic administrative measures. And again, IMF was absolutely against that. Absolutely against of any administrative measures, because in their Bible books, it was written that administrative measures and free market, it's a different stories. But finally, we convinced them. And right now, they use these techniques very, very often for different markets. I could tell you this way, but we were pioneers.
And the fund was really that against capital controls?
Yes, I was absolutely, because you know, they committed to free economy. They committed to free economy. And I explained that, sorry, guys, we have a war. Wartime, please. I could write for you special chapter, economy in the wartime. And we need this and that. But finally, as they recognized that we were right, and even.
Also, within the fund, maybe the low level bureaucrats were saying the official thing, but you know, David Lipton and the people above all understood that Ukraine.
Yes, absolutely. Initially, David Lipton, it was a quite tense relation with David Lipton, but starting from 2015, we became a very, very good friends with David.
Because he was the first point man in Ukraine, and he ended up in a reasonably good job, I think. Right.
Absolutely. He's really genius. Christine Lagarde is also, I really respect her, but the real genius of all this structure, it's a David Lipton. Right now, he's advisor of Janet Yellen. And even more, Especially Albert Smith, it will be for you my message right now. But I criticize heavily IMF for the standby program, because I think that it's absolutely not enough. It's not solve the structural problems of our imbalances. And moreover, I show you local QE, and I said, I will not finance any more Ukrainian government by QE, because I will never achieve any financial stability in this country. I will never achieve lower inflation. I will never launch inflation targeting in this case. What we need, you need to finance through your program, not the central bank, but please finance Ministry of Finance to really work with all these balances and Naftogaz, it's the gas monopoly, which you already mentioned today. And IMF help us. And David Lipton introduced EFF facility for Ukraine, and it was really a huge one. And after all, World Bank, different EBRD, IFCs introduced a big $40 billion umbrella for us. But of course, prerequisites for all of them were, please do reforms. Please do reforms. That's why, you know, I was very happy to do reforms in Ukraine, because I was supported by all international financial organizations, and they will even pay money to Ukraine for doing reform, reform not for them, but reform for our banking system, for our economy. And it's very strange when leaders of countries could not recognize that they could rely on international financial organization, and this organization will help them to do all these needed reforms. So you see the stage of liberalization, and the main principles of liberalization, of course, it may be you will see in presentation when you will be interested. It's very, very also interesting how to do that. And maybe I will tell you a few words about this principle implementation. Do you know what does it mean, BEPS? Do you know what does it mean, OECD? Organization, economic, okay, tell me something.
What
you,
know.
You should know OECD. Maybe you should know what does it mean, BEPS. Okay, BEPS, it's a base erosion and profit shifting. It's how big multinational companies try to avoid to pay taxes in their countries. That's why it's a very, very good principle. There is 15 principles of BEPS. But my idea when we created this liberalization was exactly problem of this BEPS. But unfortunately, it was not yet implemented because they agreed to implement these BEPS principles only in 2017. We are talking about 2014, 2015. But again, some principles were absolutely on surface. You know why non-productive capital outflow from your country. You understand that 99% of direct investments is not in direct investments. It's just your corporate siphon money abroad and after invested like a direct investments. You know, because I was quite experienced banker with 30 years of banking background, I know how to do that. And I was very happy when finally BEPS appeared. And I remember that even I explained to IMF what does it mean BEPS and why we need to introduce different restrictions, because we'd like to be in line with BEPS. In one day, find all these OECD principles of BEPS, it's 15 principles, look, that's them. It's very, very useful for you, future policy makers.
Olivia, can I express a practical concern? We have until 7:30.
Oh yes.
And we want to give the students some chance to ask, you know, the penetrating questions they always ask.
So quickly.
I know there's a lot of very important material here, but I may ask you just to focus on what you think is really essential, because otherwise we're going to run out of time.
Okay, new monetary policy. We already launched monetary policy of inflation targeting. It's a very, very, very detailed presentation about monetary policy, but we did it. So slides, And why we did it, what's the main principle, what kind of prerequisites, what target inflation we set up, it's everything there. What kind of modeling tool, what kind of communication policy we use, it's also everything there.
I like the picture there.
it's a silence, a national bank, yes, like here. Rupert. And as maybe a revamp of banking sector will be interesting.
Yes, this is the juicy part.
It's a very difficult part. Yeah. As I told you, the idea was clean up banking sector, reload the banking sector, and the third stage was development of banking sector. But you need to start from first stage clean up. What should you do when you observe that in Ukraine it was 180 banks? When I left Central Bank, it was 77, you see, banks. And the biggest bank was nationalized. And still, it's the biggest financial fraud compared to magnitude of our economy in the world, I truly believe. And of course, I could talk about that hours and hours. The main idea, biggest part of this organization and institution were not banks. Some of them were just money laundering machine. Some of them were just a Ponzi scheme. The other institution, except of foreigners, foreign banks, and even Russian state banks, were just oligarch banking group. And the biggest Ukrainian bank called Privat Bank was finally nationalized. After that, cleanup was completed. And so it was real revamp of 60% of Ukrainian banking sector. And only one bank was nationalized, all other were finally closed and liquidated. And it was very, very difficult, but again, how you could help a bank with no capital, with no transparent owners, with just, for example, you know, the definition junk bonds. You know, but junk bonds, it's a good bond because I don't know how to call some bonds in portfolio of Ukrainian banks, garbage bonds. Because, for example, you could issue something, manipulate prices in a so-called exchange, and after showing your balance sheet something which worth zero, you will show that it's millions and billions. For example, one fraud on one of the biggest bank in my book, it's only two cases of banks. One about nationalization of Privat Bank, another was absolutely funny. It was a money laundering machine. But when we arrive with DGF fund, it's a deposit guaranteed fund for really when the central bank called this bank. Already bankrupt, and after DGF arrived, the bank disappeared. No any trace that bank was in this territory. That's why in such, and for example, I also could recall one big fraud. It was a very known businessman, and he had some big bank called Delta Bank in Ukraine. He worked with big institution, even some loans from Cargill, some big deals, some acquisitions. And after when we start to dig deeper to his balance sheet, we recognize that he just draw correspondent account with foreign bank, which never existed. It was just in his balance sheet. It's not even in reality in this bank. And this bank had no idea that he was used in this. But why it could happen? Only because no any proper supervision from the central bank. Only, you know, central bank introduced some rules, never do really proper analysis of this balance sheet, never do the proper supervision. That's why what we start to do, we start asset quality review and stress tests. And after result of this asset quality review and stress test, finally, was a recapitalization plan, because we really checked all balances of these banks. We really recognized the gaps. And I could tell you the art of communication of central bankers. Maybe one day you will use this technique, which I use. It was when you do stress test and asset quality review of your banking system, and you recognize that your banking system is complete bankrupt. What should you do? all capital are
that
negative.
That would be a very good example, professor. I'm going to put that in. If your banking system is completely bankrupt, what should you do? A.
Yes.
Nationalize it.
Yes, but you know, right now the answer. For IMF, again, it was the first example, but finally they agreed with our approach. And finally, you will see our banking system right now. It's the most profitable and most clean banking system. But what we proposed, we said, yeah, you know, we could not solve all these legacy problems in one day. We need some period of time. Let's assume 5 years. And after we agreed, for example, capitalization to reach zero adequacy capital will be in 2 years. 5% adequacy, you know about what does it mean adequacy of banking capital, I think you are.
And Valeria, who's putting up a new capital? The owners?
Of course, the owners.
And the owners have real capital under a mattress somewhere.
The owners. And of course, it was not just, I do not to bother you with all of that. It's not necessarily just cash. For example, it could be assets, which will stay in your balance for some period of time, but at fair value. And after you could sell these assets when time will be better. And it was a complex measures. It was my own innovations. And
you,
after
you allowed real assets? I could count, you know, an apartment building as a capital.
Of course, if it's in your balance sheet, yes, why not? But take it to your balance sheet for some period of time, and we will allow you to keep it before you will sell it. And it was a very, very complex exercise. But again, IMF initially was absolutely, you know, against all these ideas. I said, okay, but what should we do? Close completely all Ukrainian banking center or what? And finally, we convince them, and right now they also use. But about communication strategy, and after you are the governor of central bank, everybody is sitting and waiting your press conference, and you need to announce the result of asset quality review and stress test. What you will do when you know that you're getting out. And finally, I arrive and start. We reach with IMF the agreement that recapitalization of Ukrainian banking system will last 5 years. In 2 years' time, we will reach zero capital adequacy and blah, blah, blah. And everybody was happy. In the same time, when, after 5 years, I asked professionals, guys, could you please tell me what I was talking about to reach capital adequacy in 2 years' time? It means that all banks had negative capital. And it's, of course, a very, very dangerous situation. But finally, we solved this problem. Yes, and next, again, it's all a lot of different information. And it's also interesting slide. It's about disclosure of beneficial owners of financial institutions. When I joined Central Bank, it was 50%. And why 50? Only because it was Russian state banks, 15% of banking system, because VTB, what else, VEF and Sberbank, of course, they are owners, official state banks. It was a Ukrainian saving bank and Ukrainian export import bank, also state banks, and foreigners like ING. I worked for ING before. And like ING, Societe Generale, Raiffeisen, all other 50% was hidden under you absolutely non-beneficial, you know, different type of trusts, different type of Cyprus companies, different type of this mess. And finally, right now, today, Ukrainian banking system, 100% transparent. Everybody knows the beneficial owners of this particular bank. And when different people try to play with the central bank and show us, because rules, for example, if it's less than 5% of banking system, you do not oblige to show, and they distribute this 5% for different homeless people, you know, and said that it's a homeless. But we did not allow them to play side games with the central bank to show us football teams instead of real owners. Finally, everybody could not disclose the real owners, went to liquidation for DGF. Okay, banking sector capitalization, endless supervisory tools. It's a very, very interesting slide about how we build absolutely brand new supervision. It's very, very difficult, but nevertheless, it's here, we did it. And it's our
can I ask you something a little bit more political?
Yes.
So a lot of these guys who were the ultimate beneficial owners of these banks were fairly rich and powerful people. Some legal and above ground, some not so legal and not so above ground. So tell us a little bit about the tugging and pulling. You know, how does one get these guys to write a check and capitalize a bank when they were very happy running a bank with no capital?
Yeah, but it's the main idea how to differentiate good oligarchs from bad oligarchs. For me, it's when somebody said oligarchs is just bad, I said, yeah, I could differentiate it easily. It was absolutely the same rules for all oligarchs because all of them had their own banks. And if, for example, in Russia, banking sector built oligarchs, here it's opposite. State banking sector in Russia built oligarchs. In our, they built themselves to be oligarchs using this banking system to collect money and build their empires. It's a different way of. And of course,
although you didn't invent that, Latin America invented that. Buy a bank and use the bank, you know, to give yourself credit to buy other things.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Time honor technique.
Yes, they recognize these techniques and use it in Ukraine. But when you have absolutely equal playing field for everybody, when your rules not differentiate for anyone, for example, it's the same rules for state banks, for oligarchs, for foreign banks, it was absolutely the same rules. And oligarchs also, they understand that it's a new rules, it's a new world, and we need to follow, or we will be liquidated, and after, of course, it will be some shortage of capital, and after, of course, it is fraud, because why you your shortage of capital because of your related parties transactions. I'm not bothering you, but about related parties, I could tell you huge, huge story. It will be 100 slides how to recognize related parties, how to differentiate all of them. But the main idea, all oligarchs get about what kind of capital. And we use absolutely the same plan, 5 years in capitalization. And it's a very good example. Two big Ukrainian oligarchs, and all of them, management and oligarchs, sign recapitalization of their bank, sign documents and still. And some of them perform, some try to find other way to avoid them. And that's why Privat Bank was finally nationalized. Only because, but Akhmetov's, maybe, you know, some biggest Ukrainian oligarch Akhmetov, he recapitalized his bank, Pinchuk recapitalized the. So good oligarch, it's oligarch who follows the rules. Bad oligarch who signed documents and never exercised.
What share of type of system assets was Privat Bank?
30%, and it was absolutely awful. Okay, it was 30% of private individual deposits. And it was also unique, that's why it's a chapter written about Privat Bank in my book, because it's absolutely unique. Right now we have a litigation process in the US, in London High Court, in Israel, in Switzerland, in Latvia. It's a state against the Privat Bank former owners. And this total, we recapitalized this bank for $5.5 billion, but total amount of fraud was $10 billion. And right now it's still in litigation. And it was 30% of private individual deposits, and moreover, it was 50% of transactional banking in Ukraine. That's why if we just liquidate this bank, it will be full lockdown, lockout on the country. Because transactional business means that they have 30 million credit cards, and 3 million pensioners, students, small business owners. And if we just disconnect this bank and send it for liquidation, it will be just a disaster. That's why
2005, we could clean up our banking system during 2 years, but finally we spent 3 years because of Freedom Bank. And I could tell you that it's unique because I asked all foreign exchange, for foreign support, our IFIs to help us with how to resolve this problem. And everybody refused even to give us any advice because, for example, in America, all biggest retail banks are publicly traded, and in the UK as well. In China, there are Communist Party owned. In Russia, let's say Sberbank still 50% in state hands. That's why there is no any it's about how to do that. But right now we know how to do that. That's why we could give advice for some countries how to do that. It's very, very difficult. And internal transformation of NBU, it's exactly Vanessa question. Oh. It's also, you remember, I told you it was medieval monster, 12,000 people. When I joined Central Bank, it was 12,000 people, 25 regional offices, absolutely no, everything was non-official. Monetary policy, not business. Currency reserve, not there. That meant, in 3 years time, it was really modern central bank. I'm very proud of that. We closed 25 regional offices because in 21st century it's no longer needed. We it was a plan from 12,000 people finally for 5 year horizon, it should be 2,000 people. When I left Central Bank in 3 years, it was from 12,000, it was 25,000 because all other you need real re-engineering of your IT and all your processes. When it will be done, finally it will be 2,000. Because we truly believe that 2,000 for such a country like Ukraine, it's more than enough. But believe me, there are a lot of inefficient central banks in the world. And your future generation will need to do real reform in these central banks. It's not, I'm not just talking about emerging markets, in developed markets as well.
Maybe the next phase is to close lots of central banks that use the euro and have no monetary policy of their own, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was even in our strategic session, we discussed what we will do in 10 years' time if we will be part of Europe. The central bank will no longer need it. It's the supervision part, yes. Just to help not centralize everything because you are locally better prepared, but for monetary policy, you do not need anyone. Even when you manage your reserves, more professionally, BIS or BlackRock will manage your currency reserves than you. And that's why I did it in a central bank, I even hired BIS or BlackRock to manage our reserves because it's more efficient, it's more professional people. Yes, so streamline, it's a different how we did it, reduce hierarchy, divisions, departments, it will be very, very again, but we have no time for that, and different type of what we removed, how we did it, it's a structural central bank, it's also a very good example. When we ask technical assistance from about new structure of central bank, because after transformation, we need a new structure. They send us to very, very old Canadian central bankers to help us to create new structure. It was really ridiculous. And finally, what we did, we copy and paste the structure of Bank of England because Mark Carney was for us a role model. Finally, the structure of Ukrainian Central Bank.
Also a Canadian, so you have old Canadians.
Yes, Canadians. Because they pretended that the law only there are central bank. No, but also a good example, for example, to before launch of monetary policy of inflation targeting, I visited New Zealand. I spent 1 week in a New Zealand monetary committee because New Zealand was most advanced inflation targeter in the world at that time. And it was very, very useful for me. And that's why a lot of techniques which you could observe in the Central Bank of Ukraine, it was not reinvented by me or by our staff. It was just the copy and paste from New Zealand Central Bank.
Did Ukraine, I forget this, did Ukraine modify the Central Bank law to give its more autonomy from the government.
Yes, definitely. That's why we need all reforms. And you know how we did it? It was transfer my life, 1.7 billion, and it was the first action. You remember how structured IMF program, some priority, and second structural issues and priorities. And it was written in the beginning, I put it to our memorandum, central bank independence law, and our parliament voted for this law. Central bank got independence and started, but it was in the beginning of 2015 and started reform. Otherwise, no any reforms could be observed here. Yes, it's a very, very interesting slide, but again, it's not for you. We created, it's not, initially central bank was one man show. Send the governor of central bank, tried to manage everything, finally managed nothing. And that's why we introduced different type of committees, policy making committee, monetary financial stability, policy execution, prudential, ALCO credit, and support, procurement, operational risk, change management and budget. It's committees which we introduced. I was only member of this one, on the management board committee, of course, management board head, but in the same time, I was only member of one of this committee, monetary policy committee. I never even tried to be involved in different part. And you know why? Because like a governor, you are always good influenced by your influence, how to say, influenced by your influence, of course, it's oxymoron, but nevertheless.
Valeria, how, let's do the following thing. Why don't we, at 7:15, we can stop and open up the question, right? So maybe you have 5 minutes to bring it all together.
So committees, very important. For policymakers, for independent, it's just really matters. All these committees, communication strategy, also very nice, how to put it, how to do that, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's sum up. As you remember, we were talking about priorities. The first priority for us was macro financial stability. The second was cleaning up Ukrainian banking sector. And the third one was transformation of the central bank itself. It's a priorities. Macroeconomic stability cannot be created on the basis of unstable, not transparent, and inefficient banking system. For you, it should be clear. Your macro financial stability in banking system, it's like a foundation of this macro financial stability. But at the same time, you know, efficient banking system could not be created without a professional central bank. That's why it looks like one, two, three, but three of them, it's like 3D idea of your reforms. And our success was not happened by chance, but I'd like to again deliver you a message. And our experience transforming the banking sector and central bank has been recognized as a tremendous success by all international partners and local stakeholders. And but it not happened by chance. We had a mission and vision. We had a detailed strategy and an action plan. We had values and leadership, and we had a strong support of international financial institutions. It's a formula of your success. And about the result, what we achieved finally? The result, after 3 years, truly independent, more modern central bank, transparent and well-capitalized banking system with the generate the highest profit in history. Last year, when I saw profit of 2021, I start to cry. When I saw the inflation target from 46% to 5, our target was 5, not 2 actually, but 5, I also start to cry. Because even when we start to do that, of course we believed, but you could believe in God, but to achieve it, it means that your actions
you
really...
God, but you actually saw God.
That's some monetary policy contributed to growth and blah, blah, blah. And I'm also very proud of that. NBU obtained number one transparency award from Central Bank in 2019. NBU was recognized like the best transparent bank in the world. It's not like from emerging markets or developed markets, just the first in the world.
And if, frankly speaking, it's my book. I promise to give someone Mission Possible, the true story of Ukrainian comprehensive banking reform and practical manual for other nations. And it's the end of our presentation. It's again the front page of The Economist this week. It's Ukraine, and it's a big pistol. You know, and believe me, new war in Ukraine now will definitely have a global consequences for all of us. It will not be just how to, you know, rip Ukraine. And what we should do, page contingency plan. Every central bank should prepare a contingency plan for their own. I'm done.
Bravo. Let me say that you know, this is a school of public service. You just got a definition of what public service is, guys. Now it doesn't get more challenging, more important, and more courageous than that. So thank you so much. It is, you know, you're going to make us all cry now. you know the definition of a banker, right? You see profits and you cry. I went to Kiev twice and I saw it up close, and I have to say that the transformation of the country, the financial mess in the beginning, the hyperinflation, the gigantic budget deficit, the completely and totally corrupt banking system, and it is a different planet. I mean, really very, very different. Of course, you know, we're all hoping that Ukrainian independence will be preserved, and that, you know, that terrible and scary picture you put up at the very end will not make us cry, but in a different way. But we'll turn to that in a minute. Okay, floor is yours, guys.
Yes, feel free.
I have about 29.5 questions to ask, but I'm going to refrain so that you get a chance to ask questions.
So after becoming independent, Ukraine has tried to follow more or less the IMF recipe, which includes, as you said, free flow of capitals, financial liberalization. And when you have the pegged currency, it normally leads to a crash of your currency. It happened to the emerging markets in the 97-98, it happened to you in 2014. But when you change to flexible currency exchange, you also have many challenges, like being sensitive to financial crisis in other places, like 2008 or the commodity crisis in 2015. So it looks like it's a rigged game, like the free flow of capitals. It hasn't been so pleasant to emerging markets as the IMF said. So is it time to reconsider, or as they say, we haven't done it deep enough?
You know, we have a discussion. My son is, frankly speaking, here, I recall, because it was exactly his question when he wrote some essay about some, I do not remember, some...
Reforms in a time of crisis, about Poland.
In South America. It was exactly his question. He said, you know, IMF, it's absolutely not a panacea. You can see all these countries, they work with IMF and after the war. I could tell you very, very simple. Ukraine started to work with IMF since independence. They signed agreement, never deliver any promises. And IMF stopped the program again. The new government arrived, again started agreement, again signed everything, nothing delivered. Absolutely the same pattern. We were the first who started and delivered. And after right now, Ukraine is still with IMF under the IMF program. Recently, we got some last tranche of 1 billion and blah, blah, blah. But you know, IMF, of course, it's not a panacea. If you have no your own vision what to do, if you do not understand how to achieve your goals, nobody would help you. But if you have IMF, it definitely will support all your progressive ideas. I could tell you this.
Well, thank you very much for the presentation. I'm wondering a bit of the ultimate goal, or at least what I understood, it was to frame all of these policies like in the EU umbrella, mm-hmm. right? But I'm just wondering, like, there's some examples of country that for different reasons have struggled to keep up the pace of the EU after entry. And like leading Ukraine into this structure in a wartime, I'm wondering if there's the risk for it to fall into the same path, of course, in the coming years, but how do you balance those risks?
Absolutely good question, especially right now, because Ukraine, unfortunately, not you know, it's not like a war of Ukraine with Russia. It's a real geopolitical tension. It's a problem only that it's in a territory of Ukraine. And Russia tell Ukraine, it's under my umbrella. Do not touch Ukraine. It's right now, Macron is in Kyiv today. A few days ago, it was Boris Johnson. Before, it was Blinken. Right now, everybody in Kyiv. And unfortunately, it's a very big geopolitical game between America, Russia, and China. And moreover, Europe is quite shaky in this situation, especially Germany, because they're very dependent on the energy sources from Russia. You know how it's happened. It could be other lecture about that, because they destroy their energy 10 years ago under the pressure of Greek, so-called Greek activists. But nevertheless, it's a reality right now. And Russia tried to join China to be against America. America tried to engage Europe to be together with. And Ukraine, it's a small Ukraine, you'll see there. Frankly speaking, it's not small, it's the biggest country in Europe. It's a big
country, yes.
Yeah, and that's why it's not small, but it's a very, very difficult question, only because Russia would like Ukraine to be under Russia's umbrella, but we'd like to be with democracy, we'd like to be in Europe. That's why for us it's values. We are talking about, you know, mission, but values. We'd like to be in Europe. We do not want to be an autocratic Russian regime. And that's why.
Can I ask something about that? The flavor of the day is Ukraine membership in NATO. We don't know what will happen in that regard. How far are we from Ukrainian membership in the EU?
Yeah, let's see. If Europe really threatened by for all this gas, you've seen the gas prices, guys. Maybe you recognize how it's happened. What's happened? Why gas prices from 100, 300 was 2000? Could you please tell me what's happened? It's all geopolitical games, and unfortunately, all of us are. But Ukraine, it's a real victim in our territory, because the army of Russia, it's walking around our borders, and it's a, maybe it's a real, maybe it's a bluff, who knows? But because Putin already annexed Crimea and Donbas in 2014, and it was real bloody war, I could imagine that it would be not just bluff, but a real action. And that's why for us, Europe, it's like an anchor. It's not necessary that we'll not achieve something. Believe me, Ukraine economy is really quite diversified. For example, we have very strong even IT sector. It's recently appeared. It's in our GDP, it's right now 13%. Next to a year, it will be 14%. We have an absolutely great agriculture. It's like our export revenues. When I joined Central Bank, it was like 10%. Right now, it's like a 50% of our export revenues, proceeds, export proceeds. And we also have metallurgy. We have a very big country with 40 million people, with good agricultural land, with a very good professional for IT sector, as I already mentioned. That's why you see, I think we could be a very good and strong partner in Europe. But it's again, it's a geopolitical games about NATO, about European. If you'd like, of course, that Putin will be happy with behavior of NATO and Europe, you need to sacrifice Ukraine for that. I truly believe that it will be not physically sacrificed, because they really deliver some weapons right now to Ukraine, means that physically we could be protected. But maybe it will be a long time when we join the EU. But again, join the EU, it's a good idea, but created in good policies. EU policies are good. What's wrong with EU policy? Sometimes, for example, for banking sector, it could be better. Efficiency could be better in Europe. But like idea and values, it's fine. Even when if we not be a part of EU, we will be with good policies, implemented policies, and all of that.
Yeah, my question is more about the conditions of the reform. So you said that Ukraine was like the banking sector wasn't doing that great even before the crisis. And it was the vision and the leadership that helped create that reform. Do you think it is because there was a lot of process that you also described, oligarchs had to like liquidate their banks, or a lot of employees were lost out of the central bank. These are huge, like feasible reforms also, which wouldn't have been possible otherwise. Do you think the crisis, the fact that Ukraine was in a war and in a crisis, made all of this process a little acceptable or easier by any way? Like a huge crisis is responsible for a huge reform, maybe?
Yes, absolutely right. There is a chapter in my book of COVID. What should we do? Recommendation for COVID. And I was truly believed that COVID was a very good example when you could accelerate your reforms. And because let's do some maybe imagine antibody of COVID. You have always people, for example, if you reformer arrive to the new organization, even in JP Morgan or in Citibank in London, a lot of people sitting there, for example, you see inefficiency, or here it's a very good example, it's NHS. It's the most inefficient system in the world. You could arrive there and you will find a lot of people who will be absolutely reluctant to do any reforms. It will be like antibodies. It will be the try to protect their territory, to not to do any changes. Reforms, it's just how to do something more efficiently. It's nothing about something very difficult. No, it's efficiency. It's called reforms, but you try to push them. But during COVID time, it means that because everybody is so scared, they don't know what to do. It means that this reluctance for changes will be lower. And it's very good time. For example, it's very difficult to start reform when you still have, for example, 500 million foreign currency reserves. You could easily, you have a panic on the market, you sell your reserves to market, you still keep your bank, but you just to siphon all your reserves to this fire, and finally fire will stop for some period of time. And you remember these steps in mind, it's stop. But after you just collect more and more misbalances, and after it will again blow up. So that's why I truly believe that when it's a difficult situation, it's a very good time to do it. For example, when we compare COVID like a wartime, you remember at the beginning, it was Boris Johnson always said, it's a wartime. I said, yes, try to do reform with NHS. And when 150,000 people died in developed countries during the first 3 months, I was shocked. I think, yes, it will be really, really very, very time to reconsider reform in NHS. But finally, have you seen any reform of NHS? No.
We have seen some great parties in 10 hours. You had a question.
Anita.
Oh, yes. First of all, thank you. I knew about the political situation in 2014, but this what is, I still can't even believe what you did in those 3 years. It's a crazy amount. But I wanted to ask about the current situation. Even if Russia stops short of a land invasion, are there other significant risks you see that they could pose to the economy and the financial system, whether it's like cybercrime or natural gas related risks, besides just an actual invasion?
Yeah, but of course, first of all, they recently did the cyber attack and they paralyzed 70 state-owned agencies. And even America promised to introduce some sanctions even for that, even not for physical invasion of Ukraine.
But of course, I am afraid of terroristic attacks as well for infrastructure, for critical infrastructure, even for central bank. Because, you know, how to stop central bank? Destroy central bank. Okay, terrorist attack. That's why, of course, I truly believe that Europe and America will find the diplomatic way to resolve this. I'm also scared about possible measures. Because finally, it will completely ruin all our reforms. Completely. Right now, even under such a huge threat, we have an absolutely stable banking system, stable currency, because everybody knows that banks are transparent, banks are with good capitalized, no any oligarchs, no any vested interest. And everything is really, really smooth, even during such a time when everybody in the world just discusses Ukraine. I could imagine it's in 2014, just someone start to discuss it will be again background, evaluation, and blah, blah, blah. Right now, when you have a very good foundation, it's stable. And I'm very happy about it. But in case of real war, you know, guys, we need contingency plan to stop administrative measures, we need to do it again and to think about that. What if Russia could buy Ukraine completely? Like, for example, Germany occupied the whole Europe in the Second War, it would be absurd. But I do not want you and me to see that. So then.
So thank you for the presentation. One of the things that came into my mind, we heard a lot of challenges. One potential challenge was the idea of how to motivate the employees within the central bank, given two things. They see you as someone who's outsider of the government context. And also they might be scared about their job and about their potential working at the central bank. So how did you have the ability to motivate an employee with such an agenda?
Yes, I remember, again, I mentioned my son because I remember he always heard a story from me when I said that, you know, I hired 7,000 people. And, but because it was 12, and after when I left it was 5, and after it should be 2, but even not 7,000, we hired 9,000 because we hired 2,000 new people. What you need to find the best people in the market. And of course, the provider of best people in the market in Ukraine was foreign banks like Raiffeisen, ING, Societe Generale, and of course, big four auditors company. And that's why they start to cry because we start to pay market salaries and attract the best employees in the market who finally did all these reforms. It's not just me, one, you know, night in the field. Absolutely not. That's why, of course, for some employees, for example, which were fired from central bank, we agreed with state tax committee because they need also new employees. For them, central bank employees were times better than their employees. And they change these employees for that. That's why, frankly speaking, finally everything was settled. But I remember when my son said, you are not humanistic, you fired 9,000 people, they will stay in the street. It's a socialistic approach. Yes, we're talking about reforms.
Children always say that. So I have one last question, if I may.
I was wondering what happened to these, like, for example, you gave an example of this corrupt banker with the fake offshore account. Was there any consequences to these people?
Best question.
Our country is very, very specific. Maybe you will find a very interesting video about our existing president. He was a real comedian. It's not a joke. It's not a joke like comedian, no. He was real clown. You will find on the internet. His name is Zelensky. And you can find on internet with whom Macron met today. He met today with Zelensky in Kiev. And after you will find Zelensky performance and you will see. Moreover, Zelensky from comedian to be a president was supported by this corrupted owner of private bank, which finally was nationalized. That's why, believe me, it's not a very easy story. My contract with Central Bank was for 7 years, but I put my resignation letter after 3 years when all reforms were done, because it was death threats daily to all my family. And it's very, very difficult situation. But banking sector is clean with owners, with support of international community, but you know, you should pay a price to be a reformer.
I think Ukraine is unique in this sense. Like, we had more than 100 banks closed, and not a single owner of a fraudulent bank was actually jailed.
Yeah, but because you need, in parallel, you need to do, we have very, very strong team in state monopoly, not Naftogaz, and in Ministry of Finance. That's why in financial markets, we did all our reforms. Well, I could tell you not a success story about our judicial system, about our court system. It's still corrupted. It's still, that's why I promise if I will do a helicopter view of reforms, I will show how to do in parallel reforms, not just in financial sector, but start, we need to start from judicial system, court system. It's a priority because all your reform could be easily reversed. Right now, the main protector of this reverse is IMF, because we're still under the umbrella of IMF. And IMF observe very carefully and tell, no, not touch the central bank, don't do that. They, like a mantra, they repeat in all their statement, independence of central bank is a cornerstone of our policy, IMF policy in Ukraine. It's a mantra for them. And that's why the central bank is even with comedian. But could you imagine comedian right now in the wartime? It's a challenge.
United States, not the current one, but the previous one. you know, career comedian.
Was,
so, you know,
first of all, not comedian, but actor. But the second one, before to be a president, he was a member of parliament during 20 years. Yeah. But our president, just from the circus, he went to the presidential chair.
So I have two final questions, and you answered one of them already. My first question is going to be, your happiest moment in office, but you've all already told us, I knew this, but the students have heard it, you received death threats again and again and again. You're cleaning up the bank. Again, this is a different level of commitment to public service. So tell us, not the worst moment, but the best moment.
Best moment.
Leave with a happy thought.
I could tell you.
Seeing the result.
Best moment was just before I resigned. It was a strategic session when all my staff was sitting around me. And no, of course, not all, but B minus two, B minus one, B minus two. And we discussed the strategy because I said, guys, I'm leaving, but you are here. I already told everybody that we did our reforms. It was my official press conference, but believe me, I will be sitting somewhere and observe daily. I was right or not. It was reform, but or just my imagination. And finally, after 2 years, it was already 2019, when I saw that it's a reality because we reach our inflation target. Financial stability, we were a really role model for other central banks. We got our transparency award, but also our reach inflation 5% and highest profit of banking sector. And I said, yes, it was a reality, mission possible. I will write for you. Yes, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Really liked it.
Very good speech.